today was some sort of a special staff meeting and Professor Masters insisted. Not half an hour ago, I wore it around my neck with nothing else but my polka dot socks as I rode both of us to our climax. I squirm in place, probably leaving a wet patch on his coarse carpet. On his desk, against the wall, on the couch, on the floor. He has had me everywhere. As I look around the room, I can see our merged silhouettes on every surface. I can hear the things he whispers in my ears. I can smell the musk of our raging borderline lunatic fucking. I can see the wrappers of Twizzlers alongside his discarded bags of chocolate croissants. I always litter, and he always picks it up and puts it in the trash can with an exasperated but indulgent look. Maybe I do it just so I can see that look. I realize that this is my home, made of my moans, my cum, and my sweat. This is more my home than my tower, than my mom's house in New York. I don't have to hide in here. I can be myself. Whatever fucked up self it is, I can be that. Thomas is all quiet and introspective. I want to ask him what he's thinking about, but I'm afraid to hear his answer. He's probably thinking about her, about Hadley. He's always thinking about her. It has been 10 days since she went away. I know she will be back. I know she'll come to realize how much Thomas loves her. There is a power in him, a power in his love. It reflects in the way he fucks me, how he slakes his frustration with my body, how his body laps up my moans, my orgasms to subdue the fury in him, how he uses me to be happy. "I thought you were trying to quit smoking," I say. I need his eyes on me. And that's the first thing that comes into my head. His muscles wake up and strain as he turns the chair in my direction and blows out a giant cloud of smoke.
"I thought you were trying to write."
His rumbly voice tells me he was on the verge of falling asleep. I can't help but notice that there's something endearing about that, and so like a man. They fuck, they sleep, they fuck again. I'm stuck. The air changes from lazy to tightly strung. Thomas is still sprawled in the chair, giving the impression of being relaxed. But the twin flames in his gaze flicker.
"Are you?"
Nodding, I get up on my knees, my notebook falling to the ground with a thud. My back arches. A default reaction now, when he looks me up and down. My winter gear along with my undergarments are lying somewhere in a heap, leaving me in a thin see-through sweater and a wool skirt. My nipples pout, much like my lips. "So, are you gonna help me?" I ask in my tiny voice, the voice that never fails to get a reaction from him. Last time I asked him to help me with my poem, he told me to sit on his cock and read it out loud while riding him. All the while he sat there like a king, never moving, simply watching me with a hunger that drove me to jump on him, up and down. I come to my hands and knees and crawl toward him, watching him through my lashes. Cigarette clenched between his lips, he follows my every move with hooded eyes. Every flutter of my loose hair around my face, every little sway of my dangling breasts that are barely hidden by my top. I reach him and he shifts his chair to face me. My hands grip his calves through his jeans, massaging the muscles as I sit up on my haunches. "So," I crane my neck and hug his leg between my breasts, moaning out loud at the delicious friction of his pants. He whips the finished cigarette out of his mouth and it lands in the trash can. Leaning down, he breathes the smoke over my mouth. I suck it in like I'll never breathe again. Oh, God. God, I can't take it. This hormonal chemical explosion inside my body, it's too much. Then his hands band over my biceps and he hauls me up,
and makes me straddle his lap. The chair creaks with both our weights. My hands caress his stubble as I murmur, "That sound is going to kill me."
"What sound?"
"Your stupid chair." And there it is, his laughter. It makes every corner of my body smile. Whenever I hear it, all I think about is you fucking me in it so it's screaming with our weight. A side of his mouth tips up in the wake of his short laugh.
"I'm kind of getting the feeling you want me for my body rather than my poetic genius."
Genius. Yep, he is that. I don't know how, but words come to him out of thin air. He looks at the ceiling and describes it in ways I never even thought of. Despite our frenzied fucking, he does teach me things. He calls me out on my poor word choice, tears me apart over overly flowery language, and I think he likes it. Other than sex, that is the one time he's animated. His eyes dripping with another kind of passion. He glows when he talks about poetry. Coming back to the moment, I say, "Actually, I also want you to bump my grades up." I move against him, my bare pussy sliding along the hard bump, barely hidden by his unzipped jeans. "Because, you see, I'm not very good at writing. My work is choppy and my word choice sucks." His eyes smolder and his hands come to grab my undulating hips.
"Is this your way of getting a compliment out of me?"
"Yes," I admit shamelessly. "Give me a compliment. I challenge you." He digs the pads of his fingers into my hips to stop me from moving.
"Fine. You don't irritate me as much as you did before."
"Wow. Stop. I'm blushing." I swat at his naked chest. "You're so good with words." He swats at my ass in retaliation, making me moan.
"I told you I'm not very good at talking. You want compliments? You should hang out with your friends instead of being with me."
It's a joke, I know. A dry, sarcastic comment. I should forget about it. I shouldn't ruin the moment. I'm on borrowed time as it is. But my stubborn heart isn't in the mood. It's remembering his words from the other night when I was in his unpacked study. I found my dad's journals, his poems, and I knew that this was the way for me to talk. Perhaps he notices how rigid I've become in his hold, because he tenses too. After my last attempt about talking about it in his car, I haven't broached the subject of his lack of writing.
"What's wrong?"
he asks, frowning. "Nothing." I smile and massage his shoulders, trying to do what I do best, distract him.
"Layla,"
he warns with that voice of his. It's not fair. I can never resist that voice. Never. I simultaneously sag and tense in his hold. I want to see you write. Something, anything, I just want you to write. A beat passes, then two. The urgency in my chest is increasing. I don't want the silence. Silence is ruining. I can't see you like this. Thomas, I know, it's obvious. You... He doesn't let me finish as he lifts me up and puts me on the desk, my legs dangling. I try to sit up, but he presses his palm on my breastbone, keeping me still. He stands over me, some kind of god of wrath with his thunderous frown and sparkling skin. My chest rises and falls under his palm, like he's the one making me breathe. If he removes his hand, I'll die.
"Take off your top."
"What? No. Thomas..."
"Take it off."
He licks his upper lip. Shivering, I obey his order. My tits come into view and he breathes deeply.
"Lift your skirt up to your waist."
I do that too, squirming, revealing my naked pussy and my tattoo. This time his breath splinters as he takes it in. He circles my tattoo with his knuckles, jerking the flesh of my stomach. With both his hands, he spreads my thighs, his thumb rubbing my soft skin, grazing my pussy lips and the fragile flesh around it. I move restlessly, bucking my hips at his touch, making my heavy tits jiggle. Thomas is aroused by the sight. He loves seeing my breasts shake, so I do it over and over, bucking, writhing, stroking his lust. It's turning me on too, even though a part of me weeps at this. I want him to talk to me. I don't want to be a distraction or a fake Cinderella. I want to be the real deal. It scares me so much that I forget to breathe. It's not the first time I'm thinking this, and I don't know how to stop. The air comes rushing back when Thomas retrieves a pack of cigarettes from his pocket. He takes one out, pops it in his mouth, and lights it up. His nostrils flare, and my mouth dries out when his entire hand grabs my pussy and squeezes. It's such a vulgar gesture. Vulgar and owning and possessive and erotic. With his other hand, he takes the cigarette out of his mouth and sends the smoke spiraling up. His hand on my pussy moves, and I almost shriek when he inserts two fingers inside and curls them up. I reach my arms out to hold on to a part of him, but he shakes his head.
Grab the edge of the desk.
Swallowing, I do, and I watch him take another drag while playing with my core. He bends at the waist and hovers over my breasts, his cheeks hollowed out, the cigarette stuck between his lips.
Thomas?
I'm scared. The burning end of the stick is too close to my body. It looms over my left breast, my heart. Is he going to mark me with it? He lifts his eyes at me, holds the stare. Something shifts in them. Something dangerous, and I struggle beneath him, afraid. Then he takes the cigarette out and blows hot smoke over my tits before he latches onto my nipple and sucks. My hips buck, lodging his fingers deeper. Moaning, I open my legs wider. My dangling feet come up on the desk, my heels digging into the edge.
You were saying?
He rumbles over my quivering flesh, sending a frenzy of arousal everywhere in my body.
What?
Tilting my head, I ask the dark-haired head currently bent over my breasts. Thomas pinches my clit as he looks up, an arrogant brow arched.
You were saying something that you know? About something that's obvious?
My head falls back down, defeated. Maybe even in anger. I don't want to be his fuck doll anymore. Thomas notices the tightness in my body and blows another mouthful of smoke on my other breast before plumping it up and sucking on the nipple. Despite myself, my pussy shoots out thick strands of arousal.
You're so fucking wet, Layla.
Thomas groans into my skin.
You're always so smooth and wet and hot. I like to think you keep it that way for me. You keep your pussy warm for me, don't you? You sleep with your hand tucked between your legs, cupping your cunt so it stays warm and toasty for when I fuck it.
My legs come around his back as I writhe beneath him, loving this, hating myself, hating him for doing this to me.
I've seen you in class, Thomas. I've seen you, looking at them when they talk about writing. I've seen how you talk about writing and art and how talented you are. I've seen the longing on your face. You want what they have and it breaks my heart,
I whisper, tears rolling down my cheeks. I want you to write so you can talk. You have to talk, Thomas. No one can live like this. A shudder goes through him at my words, and his forehead drops to my breastbone. I sink my fingers in his gorgeous lush hair and clutch him to me in longing, in tenderness. Maybe I did make a difference just now. But then he stands up, flicks his finished cigarette away. Crazily, I think that it's going to leave a mark on the carpet. He takes his cock out of his jeans. It's hard and angry and red, just like him. I know he's going to use it to punish me. Yes, punish me for being selfish enough to want more, to want to talk. I deserve it. I'm beginning to think I'm the worst harlot ever. I tip up my chin and open my legs, ready for him. Thomas clenches his jaw and in one stroke jams his cock inside me. I nearly come off the desk, my nails skating along the hardwood. Gasping, I go back down and grab the edge to brace myself because in the next second, I'm in danger of flying off and crashing to the ground. His slams are punishing, brutal, borderline violent. My teeth chatter with every stroke. My breasts heave and rebound. His grip on my thighs is going to leave marks, I know it, but most of all, it's the obvious pain of his hip bone hitting the desk that jars me. He is punishing himself as much as he is punishing me. But no matter what, no matter how brutal or violent he becomes, he never fails to make every fucking cell in my body sing. He never fails to send my pulse hurtling. I want to melt into his violence. I want to dissolve myself in the moment so he can absorb me in his body and find some peace. His eyes are narrowed to slits, his jaw clamped as he presses his palm on my lower abdomen, increasing the pressure on my organs. My head lolls, insanity washing over me. I want to tell him to stop, but I won't. I'll take it. The slap, slap, slap of our flesh is interlaced with the slurping, wet sounds of my pussy. The sloppiness of my core makes me blush all over. As if that's not enough, he looms over me, bringing my thighs to his shoulders, deepening his thrusts. He frames my face with his hand so I have nowhere to look but him.
"Do you hear those sounds, Layla?" he whispers thickly. "That's me talking to your pussy."
Then he changes angles, holds himself inside me, rotating his hips, bucking up and down, hitting me in just the right spot. In turn, I hear the sloppy gurgling of my core, a slightly different tone than the previous sounds, wetter and angrier.
"And that's your pussy telling me she likes it, saying she loves to feel me inside her."
He stops grinding at that and starts ramming with a savage force that doesn't let either of us breathe. Sweat drips from his forehead, plopping onto mine.
"That's all the talking we need to do. That's all the fucking talking we ever need to do."
He fits his face in the crook of my neck and bites my skin, launching my climax through my body. My hips arch up and become rigid in the air, the muscles of my thighs locking around his shoulders. My loss of control brings out his own, and before I can blink, he whips out his cock and comes on my stomach, groaning. In a fog, I realize he forgot the condom. He never forgets it. He's always so careful. He never discards his cigarette on the carpet. He never litters. Never, never, never. The anomaly scares me, terrifies me more than anything ever has. His sweat-soaked chest and torso contract with every heaving breath. He lets go of my thighs and grabs hold of my chin, looking deep into my eyes. For once, I don't want them on me. I don't feel any pleasure in their blazing, fire-breathing look.
"I'm not your boyfriend, Layla. I'm not going to hold your hand or take you to a movie. I'm not going to talk about my feelings with you."
His fingers flex on my jaw.
"Tell me you understand this."
I blink my heavy lids and tears fall from the corners of my eyes. They make him even angrier. There's a harshness in him I haven't seen before. Maybe he's been fooling me all along. Maybe I never made anything better. Maybe it was all an insane dream I made up to keep doing this.
Tell me,
he says harshly. Afraid. I jerk out a nod.
But he shakes his head. No. Say it. Give me the words, Layla.
I hear the shatter of my heart. I hear that sound from long ago when I broke the bottle of that expensive champagne when Caleb left. But this time around, the sound is like a gunshot, more jarring and deafening. It's the sound of my castle falling through the air and crashing to the ground.
You're not my boyfriend and you won't take me to the movies or hold my hand and you won't talk to me about your feelings.
I say in a monotone. I say it without halting or stuttering. I say it clearly. His grip loosens and a look flashes on his face, but it's gone before I can decipher it. And I don't want to decipher it. I just want to leave. Thomas moves away, goes to the window and lights another cigarette, like he did that first night he fucked me. Everything is coming full circle now. But I'm a lot different than when I used to be. Swallowing, I try to sit up, wounded and battered. My body is a war zone, a torn-up village after a sandstorm. I dress myself while Thomas is busy watching the darkness. Usually, he takes me home in his car, and I'm under my purple blanket within 10 minutes, sleepy, dreaming of him. Tonight, though, it looks like I'll be walking home. It's no big deal. Midnight Streets and I are old friends. Before I turn the knob, I face Thomas. You know I want you. I'm the crazy girl who lets you fuck her however you want. You can see it in my eyes.
That's what you said, isn't it?
It's in your eyes. You can play with me. You can play with my body because you know how much I get off on it. I'm an open book to you. I take a deep breath and unlock the door. But I can read you too. It took me a little while. It took a lot of staying awake at night, thinking about you and, yeah, stalking you, but I finally figured it out. You're suffocating yourself, hoping to breathe life into your relationship, into your love. You're holding on too tight. And maybe you need to let go. Because if you don't, you might just kill everything. I close the door behind me. And then I walk away. From him. From the only home I've ever known.
Chapter 24. The Bard. It takes me a few minutes to come out of my stupor. She's gone. She left all alone in the dead of the night. I see her running through the darkened streets, crying, her wild curls flying in disarray. What if she stumbles and falls? She has a knack for doing that. What if she bumps into a boy, a drunk boy who can't see straight, let alone understand the meaning of the word no? Layla is just a child, so young and fragile, but brave too, brave enough to be with me, to take my abuse. Her courage floors me. Her courage highlights my own cowardice. I can't let her go like this. I can't let her go, period. As I throw the cigarette out the window and button up my shirt, I become still. I become afraid. Am I not always that way? All this time, all these nights that she came to me, she has always been alone. She has walked those streets all alone, unprotected, probably without a care because she was eager to get to me. And I have been just as eager. I have been just as bent out of my head for her to get to me that I never once questioned it. I never once questioned how she got here. I never asked her if she was being careful, or if she met someone on the way over, or if it's safe for her to walk at night. I never once asked her anything. I just took and took, like I always do. I become so wrapped up in my head that I never care about anything else. But didn't I tell her this already? Didn't I warn her? Why did she keep coming back? Why did she keep offering herself to me like a fucking sacrifice? I told her she'd regret this. My head is aching, burning up. I need to make this right, but I stubbornly don't move from my spot. I won't move. I told her. It's not my fault that she left crying, that she thought this was more than what it was. I'm rooted in the middle of the room and there is a click and the door swings open. For a fraction of a second, I think it's Layla, and my body comes out of its deathly stillness. But it's not. It's Sarah. She has a bundle of papers tucked in the crook of her arms. Even so late at night, she appears put together, her hair polished and well-kempt. I came to get some last-minute printouts from my office for tomorrow, she explains, motioning to the papers. Tomorrow, Sarah and I are heading to New York for a poetry convention. We'll be back Monday, hopefully with a bunch of sign-ups for the coming semester, given I'm the bait, the youngest poet to win the McLeod Genius Grant. Layla Robinson, she says, her demeanor cold. You're having an affair with her. The flame flickers to life in my abdomen, and I tighten my body for the first electric rush of heat. No matter what the situation is, her name is powerful enough to affect me deeply. I neither confirm nor deny. Affair isn't how I describe what Layla and I have. No, it's more complicated than that. More layered. Sordid. Pure. It's more than I could ever put into words. And right now she's out there alone because of me. It's not my fault. What? No response? What happened to all your sarcastic wit? Sarah smirks, shaking her head. Get to the point, I manage to croak out, gritting my teeth. So you're not denying it, then. You are, in fact, sleeping with one of your students. Jesus Christ. You know, I didn't believe it. I knew something was fishy with all those meetings you had in here that strangely required her to go to the ladies' room after. And then, imagine my surprise when I find you here in the dead of the night after I saw Layla running out of the building. Her eyes are shooting icy daggers at me. Congratulations, Professor Abrams. You're both an incompetent teacher and a pathetic human being. She was running? That's all I can think about. She was running when she left, and I know she'll slip or stumble and she'll fall. I need to get to her before that happens. My feet move, but then come to a halt at Sarah's next words. You're such a piece of shit, Thomas. You're married. You just had a kid, and this is what you do to your wife? Sleep with a student behind her back? Yeah, a piece of shit, that's what I am. I'm a motherfucking piece of shit who only thinks about himself. I am selfish, incompetent, pathetic. Her insults sound like my own conscience. The conscience that was buried under my anger at Hadley and my need for Layla. It's surging now, along with the nausea. What do you want? What do I want? Is that all you have to say for yourself? You've broken 1,000 school rules, not to mention successfully wrecked your marriage. Hadley will never forgive you for this. You know that, right? What Hadley will do is none of your business. She left me. I fist my hands to curb my impatience. What I want to know is what you plan to do with the information. Sure. Let me give you a step-by-step description. She smiles tightly. First, I'm going to go to Jake and tell him everything. I'm sure, being your friend and all, he'll try to save you somehow, but I won't stop there. After Jake, I'll go to the chairman. I'm sure he'll have something to say when I tell him his star poet is sleeping with a student. The headache explodes. I'm asking you again, what do you want from me? Her face is streaked red with her anger. What I want is for you to quit your job. I deserve that position more than you ever will. And if I don't, then be prepared to get fired anyway, because I'm not going to sit on this. So it's really your choice, Thomas. Do you want to get fired and be disgraced, or do you want to go quietly? Before leaving, she adds, Go back to where you came from, Thomas. You don't belong here. I squeeze my eyes shut. White stars pulsate behind my lids, temporarily blinding me with the pain and anger. I can't go back. I need this job. I need to stay in this town. The thoughts float inside my head by default, like some sort of a memory that won't stop playing. They go on and on and on, until the words change and become something else. I don't want to go back, because where I came from there is no Layla. The shock of it is enough to get my legs working, and I take off at a run. I run and run, doing exactly what Layla has been doing every night, exactly what she did tonight. I come to a stop right in front of her apartment building. I don't know what floor is hers because I never bothered to stop long enough to find out. I drop her off and rush out of there. Panting, I crane my neck up and stare at the top of her building. I can't imagine her living anywhere else but at the top. She belongs in the sky. She belongs with the stars. She is bright and loud. But more than that, she is scary. Layla Robinson is fucking scary, and I don't know what to do with that. Now that I am here, I don't know why I came. What was the purpose of it all? What was I hoping to do? Go up to her apartment and knock until she opens the door? And then what, apologize? For what? For telling her the truth? For setting her straight? No. This is better. We have no future. Maybe I told her those things because I never want her to come back to me. I'm not brave. I don't know how to be brave, and I don't fucking know how to talk. Gritting my teeth, I turn around and walk away. I'm woken up by the light footsteps. They are moving toward me. I know them, that light tread. Hadley. Am I dreaming? I don't even remember falling asleep. My body is curved in an unnatural angle on the floor. I open my groggy eyes and realize I'm in Nikki's room, sitting under the window. Last night, for the first time in a long time, I came back home before dawn. I checked up on Nikki and then crashed on the floor. I blink and find Hadley on the threshold. She is back. I spring up to my feet, any sleep forgotten, the entire world forgotten at the sight of her. I whisper her name. Now that she is here, her absence glares even more. I remember all those calls I made, frantic and panicked, the voicemails I left during those first couple of days. She never got back to me. After that, I was too blinded by my rage to call her. Or maybe it wasn't rage. It was the weight of all the wrong things I've been doing. It was my lust, my need for someone else. When she left, it was a small kiss, but now my lust has a life of its own. It has a body, a heart, and a soul. It is strong and vibrant, and she needs to know. She needs to know the person I've become in the last 10 days. Thomas, Hadley whispers, walking forward. We meet in the middle of the room. Hadley, I need to... Will you hold me? She asks, delicate and vulnerable. Her words shock me. It's a zap to my already chaotic system. It's everything I've been dying to do. Just hold her. My arms, my chest, they tingle with memories of holding her. But there's something else, too. There's relief. I don't have to tell her about Layla right now. I can hold her. I want to hold her. Selfishly, I take the out she gives me. Yes. I missed you, she whispers. I nod, but the reciprocating words won't come out. She wraps her fragile arms around me and I do the same. She slides into place, tucking her face in my neck, and I breathe her in. Her sweet, feminine scent. I let her sagging posture sink into me. I nuzzle the soft skin at the nape of her neck and my gaze falls on my son. He sighs in his sleep as if he knows this is it. This is where Mommy and Daddy have made up, and now everything will be fine. At last, I have everything. This hug has all the makings of a new beginning. This right here is what I've been waiting for. Still, my stomach churns. Still, I gasp for breath. Still, my lungs are suffocating as if I'm holding on too tight. Still, I feel like this is the end of something, and I'm dying.
Part 4. The Fire Breather. Chapter 25. A few days ago, when everything was perfect, Nikki said his first words. Layla. Yeah, that's what he said. He looked right at me with Thomas's eyes, gave me a drooling chortle, lifted his pudgy hand in the air, calling me to him, and said, Layla. I remember tearing up and then laughing and then tearing up again. It was a weird thing to do in the middle of creme and beans on a Saturday morning. Did you just say my name? I asked, and then I looked up at Thomas, whose lips were twitching. Did he just say my name? Layla. Layla.
Nicky jumped up and down on his dad's lap and laughed again, bumping his head on Thomas's chin. He did. I remember being astonished. Oh my God, he did. Am I his most favorite person or what?
Don't get too excited. He's probably just making up words like he always does.
He ruffled Nicky's hair.
And in his defense, your name does sound made up. Two randomly put together syllables.
Thomas shrugged. I remember the dark strands of his hair catching the winter sun and hitting me right in the chest. I pretended to be outraged. I don't remember what I said in retaliation. Something like, oh yeah? And what is Thomas? Ta-mas. Isn't it, like, a lame modification of Chris-mas? He laughed. I remember that because I was bursting with pride in being the one who brought it out in him. It's Saturday again, and it's all I can think about as I enter Creme and Beans. Nikki's voice is all I hear, and Thomas's glinting hair and amused eyes are all I can see. And it's a good thing, too, because if I think about whom I am here to see, I might turn back and never come out of my room. As if he senses me standing here, he looks up from his mug of coffee. My chest is caving in on itself as I take in his face, a face I haven't seen in more than 2 years. God, he looks older. So much older, as though he's let himself go, given his body permission to grow out on him. Longer hair, broader shoulders, shadow of a beard. But then he smiles, and it's the smile I've seen in my dreams forever. A smile that never fails to make me smile. And then we're running toward each other like a couple of kids. I jump into his arms, laughing and crying. It's like the last 2 years never happened. It's like all the awkwardness in the world can't overshadow the fact that he's the closest friend I've ever had. Caleb Whitmore, my very first friend. We break apart, still laughing, and he lets me down on my feet.
Hey,
he says in a voice that's so familiar to me, so fucking familiar that all I want to do is break down and cry. Hey, I whisper over the ruckus my heart is making. I'm so damn happy to see him.
You look fantastic.
He tucks my unruly hair behind my ear. You do too. I poke his wispy beard. Where did that come from? Caleb gives me a sheepish grin, rubbing the spot.
I'm going for a mature look.
What? Why?
People take the beard seriously.
You're kidding. I frown. But giving you a hard time over at your dad's office?
It's not too bad. But you know, extra muscle helps.
He rubs his barely there beard again, making me laugh. Do you want me to kick their asses for you? He laughs, an indulgent look in his eyes.
God, I missed you.
He swallows, growing serious.
So much.
Yeah, I admit on a broken whisper. We walk to his table and sit across from each other. Caleb watches me expectantly, and I shoot him a questioning look. He glances at his coffee and then at me.
You don't want to steal it?
No, I don't steal anymore. The only person I want to steal from is not here. A lump forms in my throat and I chuckle around it, trying to keep things light. Are you calling me a thief?
Well, yeah, you are one.
I don't think you're remembering things correctly.
I remember everything about you, Lei.
I glance away. It's too hard to look into his eyes and find my old self reflected back. There are ghosts moving in the depths of them. My ghosts. But I don't look like them anymore. I've changed. I've changed so much since the time he knew me. I've done things, despicable things since then. Then again, maybe I haven't changed at all. I was crazy then.
I'm crazy now.
Thanks for the gift basket, I say to break the silence. Yesterday evening, Caleb sent me a gift basket with Twizzlers that I only noticed when I came home from Thomas's office. It was sitting on the coffee table. Emma had brought it in. She grilled me about it too, asking me who the secret admirer was. I had to laugh at that, though it came out distorted, too much like a sob. I told her it was from Caleb and that he is gay. It didn't hurt to say that. It didn't hurt to say I used to be insanely in love with him, but he never loved me back. In fact, if I'm being honest, I haven't thought about Caleb at all in the past few days. Makes me wonder if Thomas was as much a distraction for me as I was for him. You didn't have to bribe me, you know.
I didn't think you'd want to see me after what I told you.
Why didn't you tell me? I whisper, unable to go higher than that. I'm exhausted. Breathing seems like a chore. I just want to stop. Stop running, obsessing, blaming. He clasps his hands on the table.
I didn't know how.
But it was me, Caleb. Me. We grew up together. You were my best friend. Wasn't I yours? It's such a petty, childish thing to ask. Wasn't I your best friend when you were mine? Still, I feel it's the most important thing I can ask him. More important and vital than, don't you love me? I realize now that I might crumble if he answers in the negative. His friendship means far more to me than his reciprocation of love. He lets out a watery laugh.
How can you ask me that, Lay? When I've spent every second of the past 2 years missing you like hell, I...
He thrusts his hand through his hair.
I felt so... guilty. So lonely, so unlike myself. But I didn't know how to face you after... what I did. The way I took advantage of your love, the way I left you.
It's hard to look at him. To look at the naked regret on his face. My heart curls up in my chest and rocks back and forth, hurting. He's blamed himself the same way I have blamed myself. I don't want him to do that. I don't want to think about what happened. It's too fucking depressing. It's time to share the blame and then move on. I forgive you, I tell him. I do, for whatever happened. Do you forgive me? He takes my hand in his own and squeezes. Yes, although there's nothing to forgive, Lay. I smile through my tears. It's over. It's done with. I feel light, both floaty and grounded. We spend the next hour catching up. He tells me how hard it was for him throughout high school, how he thought he was weird. He was afraid his dad wouldn't ever accept that part of him. I tell him he was being stupid because, hello, this is the 21st century. Who cares if you're gay? Then I tell him about how bad things got after he left. How my mom wanted me to go to the youth center, but I got out of it by coming here. I tell him about Kara. I tell him about my tower, about Emma. The only thing I don't tell him about is Thomas Abrams. What is there to say about him anyway? He's my professor. He taught me that reading can be cool, that words are the most important thing in the world, and I used to sleep with him and now it's over. I let him vandalize my body, my heart, my dreams. I became a slut for him. But that's okay. He never asked. In fact, he warned me about him. His cruelty. I gave up my morals voluntarily. I gave him everything, but he wanted nothing from me. I miss the city, I say to Caleb out of the blue.
Then come back.
His expression is hopeful, the green in his eyes shining.
Yeah, come back. They'll easily take you in at Columbia. Your credits will transfer and you can live with me. You don't even have to go back to your mom's.
I smile thinking of it, picturing living with Caleb. All the movie nights we can stock up on. All the video games we can play. It could be like the old times. I could have a new home. I could build a home for myself. And then, in the middle of creme and beans on a lazy Saturday morning, I have an epiphany. It's bone-chilling. It tells me I'd rather be homeless than be away from here. This place. I can't, I whisper, shaking my head.
Why not?
Caleb senses the seriousness in my tone. Because I need to be here.
Why?
Because. I suck in huge gulps of breath, but I'm still afraid I'll pass out. I'm in love. Chapter 26 The snow has melted, ore is in the process of melting. And from underneath it, the earth is emerging. Stark and damp and ugly, but somehow still beautiful. I like to think we had something to do with it, Thomas and I. The friction we created with our naked bodies made the fire that dissolved the frosty world. Because the way we came together was magical. It made me fall in love again. It could almost be a story I'll tell myself when I'm dying. The harlot fell in love with the fire breather. It was beautiful and right. It was wrong and ugly, just like the earth beneath my feet. It was tragic and ecstatic. It was everything I hoped love could be. This time, though, I'm going to do everything right. I'm going to change, be a better version of myself. I can't stand the thought of my love ruining anything. It's too pure. Purer than any love that came before it or any love that will come after. It takes me 15 minutes to reach my destination, the sprawling house with a tree dangling over the roof. I know Thomas isn't in there. He's in New York for the poetry convention, but still his presence lingers. His displeasure drags my steps down. He wouldn't be happy if he knew I was here, uninvited. But this is something I have to do. I need to do. This love is my strength, not my weakness. I knock, once, twice, and stand there huddled into myself. The door swings open and it's Susan, the lady I met a few days ago in the most unconventional way. I give her a small, trembling smile, and she returns it with a confused frown. Hi, I'm Layla, I remind her, even though I know she knows. How could she forget? The girl Thomas brought in at night when his wife wasn't home. Thomas isn't here. She purses her lips. I know. That's why I came. I widen my eyes in horror at how it sounds. No, I didn't mean it that way. It just came out wrong. I sigh. Look, I know you don't like me. I'm not liking me very much either right now. I need to see Nikki. Susan opens her mouth to say something, but I rush on. You can be there the whole time. I know it's an unusual request, and you've got no reason to trust me, but I promise you, I have no intention of harming him. I love that little guy, and he loves me back, you know? I mean, I'm not good with kids. In fact, I don't know anything about them, but he's kind of my friend, and I just want to talk to him, apologize, and you won't have to ever see me again. What did you do to him that you need to apologize for? She is looking at me with an evaluating gaze. I'd rather tell him. Please. Maybe my desperation to talk to a 7-month-old baby breaks through to her. Or maybe she takes pity on a girl with tears stuck to her eyelashes. Either way, she nods and steps back. 5 minutes. I stand there the whole time. Relief sags my shoulders. Yes, yeah, anything. I step inside Thomas's house for the second time, and it feels more wrong than my previous visit. Sunlight pours into the living room, and there he is. Nikki, playing in his bassinet. The sun rays make him glow, all pink-cheeked and stubby-nosed. The little guy with his drooling chin and tufts of black hair commands my entire attention, like the room begins and ends with him, just like his dad. I feel a surge of love for him, something very similar to maternal love, which is the weirdest thing I've ever felt in my entire life. I'm not a mother. I'm barely an adult myself. But as I walk over to Nikki, my arms ache with the need to pick him up and smush his face into my neck. I come down to my knees in front of him and smile, looking into his blue eyes. He is chewing on a baby elephant and abandons it to grin at me. Layla! He shrieks. Hey, little guy. You remember me, don't you? I finger wave at him like I always do, and he grabs me with his sticky palm. I bend down and place a soft kiss on the tiny fist holding my finger. He chortles and keeps chewing at his elephant. I remember Thomas telling me how Nikki thinks everything is food.
Hey, I've got a present for you. Here. I take my Russian-style hat off, this one white in color. You can have it, though you already have my most favorite one. I blow fishy kisses at him, making him laugh. God, you're so adorable. I could just eat you up. I feel Susan's presence, so I hastily add, I won't, though, so don't worry. Nikki plays with his new hat, waving it around in his dimpled hands while I gather the courage to say what I came here to say. I broke the deal. I blurt out, much like I do with Thomas when I need to get something difficult off my chest. I cringe. Ugh, that just sort of came out. I think I should start at the beginning. Not that it's going to make any difference to you. Nikki is busy with the hat and waving his fists while squirming in his yellow onesie. But I'm going to do this the right way. So, I made a deal with your dad. It wasn't anything formal, it was just a silent understanding. And trust me, I only made it because I thought he needed it. I needed it too, but his need was so much bigger than mine, you know? So much more potent. But I broke the deal. Susan shifts behind me, but I keep my focus on the little bundle who doesn't even care what I'm saying. I know you're not going to understand what I'm saying right now, and you're probably going to forget all about me because I don't think we'll see each other anymore. But I want you to know I didn't break it on purpose. The deal, I mean. It just happened, okay? I never planned on, you know, falling for your dad. I scrunch my eyes closed and breathe out a puff of air. But I'm going to do the right thing now. I'm backing off, Nikki. You don't have to worry, okay? It won't touch you. My mistakes won't come back to haunt you. I think of the tears Emma has shed for something that was never in her control. Nothing is worth that. I know it now. No amount of excuses can absolve what I did. And if there's even a sliver of a chance that it can touch this little guy, I'm not willing to take it. Tears gather in my throat and eyes, and I swallow to bury them. Not that Nikki notices. Your dad loves you very much. He isn't like my dad. He'll never leave you, and I bet your mom loves you equally, if not more. And you know what? Your dad loves your mom just as much as he loves you. So, don't worry about anything. I sniff. I'm sorry for whatever damage I did. I lean over and kiss his forehead. He gurgles out a laugh. This is the last time we'll see each other. So take care, okay? I'll never forget you. With one last look at him, I stand up and find myself face to face with the most beautiful and fragile-looking woman I've ever seen. Hadley. She's back. She is back. Just as I thought she would be. I always knew it, but still, it seems incredible. I want to laugh and then I want to cry. Before I really do any of that, the situation becomes glaring. I'm practically a stranger and I was rambling to her baby like a deranged person. She is studying me with gorgeous golden eyes, and I feel so ashamed. So naked. I'm the girl sleeping with your husband. Me. I'm the one who fell in love with him, who dreams about him, who will probably keep dreaming about him for the rest of her life. So, you can kill me if you want to. In fact, I'd advise that myself. You're so good with him, she says in her classic, melodic voice. What? I squeak. In comparison, I'm a hyena with broken vocal cords. With Nicholas. You're good with him. The musical notes of her voice stumble over the name of her son, going off key. Now that the initial shock of seeing Thomas's love in the flesh is gone, I study her with as much objectivity as I can. Her eyes are swollen and red-rimmed, and her blonde hair, though beautiful and smooth, looks too threadbare. She has on a large white sleep robe that swallows her petite body. She appears even more fragile than the last time I saw her. But she seems to be at peace. She glows with an odd light. This is the woman who left her 7-month-old baby alone and went away. This is the woman who left Thomas. I want to shake her, shout at her. In this moment, I'm so fucking jealous, so angry. She has everything that I want and she doesn't even care. Before my anger turns harsher, I remind myself that I'm in the wrong here. I took what belonged to her. I have no right to feel this way. I've got no experience with kids, but Nikki makes it easy, I guess. I add, you have a beautiful family. She stiffens at my answer, and I regret saying the last part. My anger was apparent just then. Maybe even my jealousy. I don't know. I need to leave before I blow our cover and make trouble for Thomas. Just then I hear Susan coming back. Here. She thrusts the book at me and I stare at it in confusion.
The book. It was right on the desk and I was looking for it everywhere.
When I still don't take it, she goes on.
Thomas doesn't like when someone touches his books. But you must be failing pretty badly in class if he wanted you to have it for the exams, no?
There's a mischievous twinkle in her brown eyes, and I wonder how she is even capable of it at a moment like this. I take the book. Okay. I practically run out of there and speed walk until the house is out of sight. Then I come to a stop in the middle of the road and look up. The sun is out, and I can't remember the last time it was sunny like this. It feels like it's been ages since I saw the sun. The world is brighter, and I feel that I did something right. I restored all the balance I'd tipped. The broken rules are patched up. The universe is right again. I send a wish up in the clear sky. Please, let Hadley be back for good this time. Please give Thomas what he wants. Please, God. And then I cry all the way back to my tower. I hate the fucking sun. Chapter 27. It's Sunday night and I'm alone in the apartment. 2 months ago I would have used this time to binge on Twizzlers and porn. I'm still binging on Twizzlers, but instead of porn, I'm typing like the wind. My fingers are flying on the keyboard, words pouring out of me. And I'm thinking, no one has ever written a story like this. For weeks I've had this girl in my head. She is loud. She has a neon green backpack. She is adventurous and she wants to see the world. Her name is Ava. For weeks I ignored her because, hello, I want to be a poet, not a fiction writer. Fiction writers are lame. Poets are geniuses. They change the world. They make you think. They are magical. Like Thomas. But I can't ignore her anymore. I can't ignore her need to take shape. Besides, I know if I don't write, I'll never stop crying. I might even slip back to my destructive ways. I might drink all the liquor and smoke all the pot, and then I'd die and I don't want to die. I want to live. I want to write. Tap, tap, tap. Then I hear a shrill noise. My phone. I jump and turn around at my desk. My room has exploded. Clothes and books and empty candy boxes are on every surface. I have half a mind to let it go to voicemail, but for some unknown reason, I don't. The noise is coming from my bed, and I dive for the phone before the ringing stops. It's an unknown number, but I pick it up anyway. Hello? A growly voice crackles through, making my heart flounder.
Layla.
Thomas? My legs give out and I plop on the bed.
Are you alone right now?
Yes. I look around as if checking, as if I didn't already know I was alone.
Open your door.
You mean my front door? I stand and walk to the threshold of my room, eyeing my closed front door in confusion.
Yes, your front door.
Okay. There comes a long sigh.
You should probably also tell me which door is yours.
His voice somehow sounds both indulgent and self-deprecating. Like he's ashamed that he doesn't already know which door is mine. The last apartment on the right.
What floor?
He asks patiently. Top floor. His laugh is broken.